continue with the second part of the tutorial. It goes until 12:30 when we will have lunch, and then the tutorial will be continued in the afternoon. So we were just talking about this the exchange requirement. To sum this up, this stereotype thus ensures a generic exchange condition where you have this constraint that after a start state in an activity diagram, eventually you will reach a stop state in every complete execution of the diagram. But of course, it may be the case that a diagram is not executed completely because the attacker stops the system completely. Then, in that case, this cannot be realized, of course. But in all other cases, this constraint should be fulfilled. The next kind of stereotype is the secure links requirement. The next couple of stereotypes actually all concern different kinds of aspects of a secure architecture of a system. And these different aspects of this security are split up into different kinds of stereotypes, such as secure links, and later also secure dependencies, and so on, which we'll see in the next couple of slides. Because although these are just really different aspects of the overall security of the system, and you usually want to have all of them, they're split up into different stereotypes, because in different phases of the system, you may only have some of the requirements. And so in that sense, it's good if you are able to concentrate on certain aspects of the security of the system at certain points in time. And so this is the secure links aspect, and this means that within the the situation is that you want to make sure that in the architecture of your system, when you compare the physical level of the system to the logical structure of the system, and when you include certain security requirement on the logical level of the system, such as that a certain communication between two components should satisfy the secrecy requirement, then this should be supported by the underlying physical architecture of the system. In that sense, in this case, by the internet connection between the two nodes with respect to the given adversary model. So, so this is intuitively what secure links one would want to mean. The stereotype secure links, that in such a situation one looks at the security requirements inserted as stereotypes, and at the stereotypes which represent certain physical characteristics of the system, and then with respect to a given adversary model, the tool support will then evaluate whether this diagram specifies a secure architecture of the system. So firstly, we have to, if this is sort of given as a motivating example, we have to worry about how to define this constraint which should be associated with the secure links stereotype, how to define this more precisely so we can code this up in the tool support. More precise definition is then, the goal is that we want to make sure that the physical layer supports the security requirements on the communication level. And the technical constraint, which is then checked by the tool support for this approach, is that for each dependency in that deployment diagram, such as the one we just saw, for each dependency which is marked with a certain security requirement, there should be a supporting communication link over which this communication dependency is implemented, in such that if the communication dependency is supposed to satisfy the secrecy requirement, then with respect to the given adversary model, the adversary is not able to read the communication that is communicated over the communication link. And similarly, for the integrity security requirement, it should not be possible that the adversary inserts information in that communication link. And well, this is probably rather intuitive that this should be the case, because secrecy means someone should not get hold of certain information, so he should not be able to read the information that's exchanged. And integrity is works in a dual way. But now, yeah, the question is this actually fulfilled in this example, which I just gave as a motivating example? Can anyone see whether this is the case here? So if we look at the definition which I gave on the next slide, whether this constraint is actually fulfilled here. So the constraint was that whenever you have a communication dependency between two components and there is a security requirement such as secrecy or integrity, then there should be a communication link between the nodes on which the components reside, which supports this security requirement. So in this case, we have one communication dependency here. This is the one from the web server to the interface of the client application. So well, I guess the example is supposed to be a system where there's a user at his PC is connected to a web server via the client applications on his computer, and at some point, well, the user should have remote access to the server by sending his password to the server machine. So at some point, there the password from the user should be input into his PC, but of course, this then has to be communicated to the server, so the server knows that the user is allowed to log into that or to have access to to the web relevant web pages. But of course, this password has to be communicated secretly to the server machine, because otherwise an adversary, if the data is not confidential against the adversary, then this means that an adversary may get hold of this data and then may be able to access the protected information on the web server using this password. So therefore, we have the secrecy requirement attached to the communication dependency, and while this system should be implemented over the internet. Now, if we go back to what we defined earlier with respect to these thread sets, in that situation we just looked at, what we worry about a default adversary, and this is also part of the sort of definition of this adversary model. And for example, with respect to the stereotype internet, we can see that the default adversary is able to delete, read, and insert messages that are exchanged over internet communication link. So in particular, we have read. The read is an element of this thread set with respect to the default adversary and the internet stereotype. So if we go back to this this requirement, if we want to know whether the secure links stereotype is fulfilled or is correctly attached to this diagram, which we just saw on the previous slide, the tool support then would check whether this constraint is fulfilled by considering this dependency, which was given in the diagram, which actually is attached with this secrecy stereotype. And in that case, since this is the case, we have to look at the nodes at which the components sit and see whether there's a communication link which does not have the read in its thread set. But unfortunately, the only communication link that the secrecy communication can be implemented, so the communication could be implemented which should satisfy secrecy, is the internet communication link. And as we just saw in the adversary model, this does not protect the default adversary from reading the communication on this link. So therefore, in fact, this secure links stereotype is, or the requirements for this stereotype is violated in this example. So what this means exactly is now, and when using this approach, that if someone draws such a diagram and inserts these characteristic and these security requirement, and then the overall requirement that the architecture of the system should satisfy this constraint, then the tool support will give back the result that in fact here the constraint associated with the secure links stereotype is actually violated, because as I just explained, the default adversary is able to read the information that is exchanged over this communication link, which was supposed to remain secret. After lunch, I can give a short demo of the tool support, and you can then actually see that this is actually done automatically. So I will have a drawing of this diagram in a UML case tool, which I will then save as an XMI file, and which I can upload into our tool, and then it will give us this answer which I just explained. Although, of course, this is still a relatively easy thing to check. I mean, this is you don't need a lot of logic or sophisticated analysis machinery, because this is still really more a consistency check. But we will see more difficult requirements later, where you actually, on the level of the tool support, you actually need some more heavy tool support. So the next kind of stereotype, this is still also sort of more consistency check, which should be realized, and this is a certain aspect of having a secure overall architecture of the system, and that's the so-called secure dependency stereotype. So as the motivating example, again we have this class diagram here, and we can see that this is supposed to implement a key generation component in a system. So a cryptographic key should be generated using this operation new key, and of course the key should remain secret against possible adversaries. So it should not be sent out unprotected over internet links and so on, because otherwise the cryptographic key would be useless. That's why this secrecy check is included here. This is another stereotype which I should mention here, the critical stereotype you can just use to attach these kind of security requirements to attributes or to methods in the class diagram. So here we have a class diagram with an object key generator, and we attach this critical stereotype to the key generator to signify that that there are some data which should remain secret. So this, on the one hand, this is the new key method, and then the random method. Okay, and yes. So this kind of data is now supposed to satisfy these requirements. And the point now is what we want to now enforce in this the secure dependency requirement is that these security requirements are consistent throughout the system. And the point is that here we want to use some kind of modular system development approach where maybe different developers develop different components of the system, or you want to be able to reuse components that were developed earlier. So you should be able to just use a component which you didn't develop yourself, but which nevertheless enforces certain security requirements which this component should deliver. So this means in particular if here at the key generator we not only okay, so on the one hand the key generator says that it it wants to create or give back a key using this new key operation, and it aims to do this in a way which ensures the secrecy of this new cryptographic key. But on the other hand, in order to be able to do that, the key generator needs to have a random value from the random generator, and it requires that this random value should also remain secret. So this is sort of rely guarantee view or assume assumption commitment view, where different components realize certain requirements, assuming that other components also realize certain security requirements. I mean, this is of course a classic approach in system development, but now applied to security requirements. So if we now look at this structure, so not yet at the behavior, but only at the data structure, this means, okay, the key generator wants to have a secret random value, but this on the other hand would then also mean that the random generator is aware of the fact that the random value it should produce should actually remain secret. So under the point why the key generator wants to have the random value secret is that the key is computed deterministically from this random value, which means that if the adversary gets this random random value, he can compute the cryptographic key himself, and therefore it will then not be secret. So that's why the secrecy of the new key method depends on the secrecy of the random method. And yeah, so this this means in particular, as I said, the random generator has to make sure that the random value remains secret, and for example, depending on the adversary model, that it's not stored in the cache of the system that is used, and without being deleted later before someone else can use the particular computer that is not who is not trusted and who could read out this information from the system cache or something like that. So the first question is, what is the constraint that we have to formulate here in order to enforce this kind of requirement using such a stereotype secure dependency? And then this is again some kind of consistency check as in the secure links case. So as I said just now, we want to make sure that the communication dependencies between different components or objects respect the security requirements on the data that is communicated between the different components and objects, and which are given, for example, by the secrecy and integrity tags. So this should also apply to the other kind of security requirements, which one can also include using tags, but Here I can only explain this for some of the security requirements. The technical constraint is then that for every such call or send dependency between two components or objects, every message in one of the two objects should satisfy the security requirement if and only if it is required to satisfy this security requirement in the other object. So the communication dependency should preserve whatever kind of security requirement should be there in the different objects. And then also, if there's such a security requirement, the communication dependency itself should also be stereotyped with this security requirement, because this information will then be used, or for example, this information was already used in this secure links stereotype. So going back to this example, on the one hand, we whenever one component requires a certain value to satisfy a certain security requirement, which is delivered by another component, then this should here also state that this requirement is delivered. That's the first requirement. And the second is that this call dependency should then also marked with the same security requirement, because this can then also be used in the secure links stereotype to make sure that this class diagram is then implemented in the physical structure of the system in a secure way. And so again here the question is whether this this constraint is now enforced here in this diagram. Does anyone see whether this is the case? Yeah, so this is again why we have to go back to this constraint here. So we have to just check this constraint in that case. So we have one call dependency between this object and the interface of the other object. Okay, so for this call dependency between these two objects, we have to make sure that if a message is marked secretly in one object, so such as the random, say the random message is marked with secrecy here, it should then also be marked with secrecy in the other object along this dependency. And what we see here that this random method, which is actually offered by the random generator, is not tagged with this the secrecy tag here. So that's one problem, one reason why it's violated here. And the other constraint, then this communication dependency should also be stereotyped with this requirement in order to make sure in the secure links requirement that this is implemented securely. So on the whole, this in this example also, this stereotype is now violated. And this is also, again, automatically pointed out by the tool support for this approach. So it would point out that, there's probably a security requirement missing here at the random generator. Or alternatively, one could, of course, remove it here. But then this new key method would probably then also not be able to provide the secrecy requirement. So this is yet another stereotype which we will see later, which one can apply to a single object to make sure that that whenever there's a secrecy requirement on which is guaranteed as an output, such as the new key method, that this is actually enforced by the behavioral specification of the object, for example, given in a state chart, when considering which inputs also will satisfy the security requirement. But we will see that data how that works. Anyway, in this case, the secure dependency requirement is violated, firstly, because the random generator does not offer a secret random value, and secondly, because this communication dependency is also not assumed to be, or not not protected. Okay, oh yeah, now we actually have this next security requirement, which one can now use to make sure that in the previous example, the random number generator actually produces no, sorry, the let's say the key generator actually produces a secret key, assuming that the random value that is input to the key generator is also secret. So more generally, and we have a slightly different example here, more generally the point is now, okay, assuming that we have a secure architecture of the system in the sense that as realized with the secure links stereotype, the logical, the requirements on the logical level are enforced by the properties on the physical level on the one hand. On the other hand, the requirements on the logical level are also consistent between different objects. So this is what the two previous stereotypes gave us. Now we still have to make sure that each single object or component actually enforces these security requirements. So if the key generator, as I said earlier, if the key generator just states that it will deliver a secret key given a secret random value, we now have to make sure that this claim is actually correct based on the behavioral specification of this component. And so this behavioral specification can be given, for example, in a state chart diagram, which we can see here, for example. So and in this example, we assume that we have a customer account on a web-based e-commerce system where a customer can log in to to the website in the scenario which we saw earlier with this e-commerce transaction, and the assumption is that the customer has an account which enables him to log in and to enables him to buy things. And this account should store, for example, how much money the customer has spent already at this website. And that way, the requirement is that the system should offer some extra service to customers that have already spent a lot of money at the website. And this is reflected by the fact that here in a in an abstract view of this system which concentrates on this extra service aspect, here we can see that there is in this abstract state machine there are two states, namely the one where the customer still doesn't have an extra service, maybe because he just started setting up this account and still has not spent anything at all, or because he has performed some transactions, but the money spent so far is still below 1,000 of the given currency. So in that state, or the customer can, using this write money method, this is what is happening internally in the system, when the customer buys something, the corresponding amount X is added to the money attribute in order to store how much money the customer has spent already. And then within the system, there is an read extra service method where another part of the system can check whether this customer should receive at this point an extra service or not. And based on that, maybe there's extra functionality on the web page or whatever. And also, this component of the system offers a method to other components of the system, which is this read method, read money method, which allows the other component to read the the amount of money spent so far. And if the customer performs a number of transactions so that the internal money attribute eventually is above 1,000, then the system gets into a new state where the customer actually is supposed to receive an extra service. So if in that state this another component of the system queries this Rx method, then there will be a true return rather than a false. Okay, so that's the sort of the this view of the system, of this part of the system. And now, for privacy reasons, the requirement is that the money attribute and therefore also the methods which allow one to read and write the money should remain secret. Because, well, not everyone should know how much money the customer has spent at the website. Okay, that's the requirement. And now, of course, the problem is that simply by putting in a label in a UML diagram, this doesn't really do anything to start with. We still have to make sure that this requirement is actually enforced or respected by this behavioral specification there. And this may not be so easy. So how would one do this manually? Okay, you have to look, of course, firstly, you have to see, you have to make sure that any kind of interaction with this component that is possible through the different methods, namely read money, write money, and read extra service, that this interaction does not leak out any confidential internal information. In this case, does not leak out any information about the money attribute. And this is what is now supposed to be enforced by this no downflow stereotype. So the name comes from the field of secure information flow within the information security area, where these are security requirements which should enforce that when information flows throughout different components of a system, it is made sure that there is no degradation of security of this information while it is computed in the different components. So, for example, it should not happen that a component receives some secret information, performs some computations, and then that way leaks out information about the secret data to parties that should not get any information about the secret data. And one practical example I already mentioned, this problem with the smart cards, and there you actually have this kind of indirect or partial information flow where an adversary can get some information about the data that is stored on the smart card simply by observing how much power the smart card uses during the computations that happen while the software is executed on the smart card. This is an example where you would have a secret data on the smart card, and you would have a user of the smart card that is not trusted, and through interactions with the smart card gets out at least partial information about the data stored on the smart card, which should, however, remain secret. So this is the kind of thing which you want to prevent using this kind of no downflow constraint. So there should not be a flow of information from the trusted layer of the system, which is usually called the high level in the system, to the low level, which is the untrusted part of the system. This is why it's called no downflow. And this originally came from the military sector, where you often have multi-level secure systems. Well, this is also something which we know from spy films, spy movies, where you have these top secret guys and the secret guys and so on, down to the non-classified data. And this this is sort of where this comes from. So you may have different levels of secrecy, even not just secret, but you know, very secret, not so secret, and so on. And there shouldn't be no leakage from the higher security requirement down to the lower security requirement. And this is, well, for a given example, this is not so easy to see that this is actually prevented, this kind of problem. So the first question is again, how can we define a stereotype which enforces this kind of constraint? But yeah, okay, now this is becoming more a little bit more complicated. So I can, in this slide, I will now just say informally how this works. But when I say a little bit more about the tool support later, I can also explain in detail how this is defined. The point is here that this, to formalize this constraint, which is here given informally, so the value that any data specified in secrecy may influence only the values of data also specified with secrecy. It's formulated in this way because if this is not the case, if secret data may influence data which is not secret, then this means that by looking at the non-secret data, you can get a partial piece of information about the secret data because it can because it influences the non-secret data. So again, in the case of the smart card, the secret key stored on the smart card influences when you do a computation, influences the amount of power that is consumed by a smart card at a given point in time. And that is, of course, not secret because any adversary can, or anyone having the smart card can measure this power. And in that sense, this constraint would be violated there. And so that's why the constraint is formulated in that way. And in order to formalize this now, to define this more precisely, to be able to implement this in the tool support for this approach, now one actually has to refer to an execution semantics of this diagram, because if we worry about influence which happens at the execution time of the system, we really have to refer to the execution semantics of the diagram, and that I will explain in a little bit more detail later. But here I only want to say that it is possible to define a precise execution model for this diagram, and then also to define this no downflow constraint with respect to that execution semantics, and to have that analyzed automatically. So I can also give an example with the tool, how to do this with the tool after lunch. But now this is an example for a security requirement where you actually need a more sophisticated tool support to be included into the tool support of this overall approach. So for people who know a little bit about that, what we use here is a so-called model checker, which can automatically compute all the different states in which, or at least a finite part of the state space which the system will go through when this state chart is executed, and for each state is able to check whether this constraint still holds or whether this is still is already violated. And the reason why, of course, you could implement this yourself, such a constraint, but the problem is that with such reactive systems which interact with their environment, you very quickly get a very large state space of the system, because at every point in the system execution, the environment can do different things, and so this is a sort of an explanation which is So you get a state space which grows exponentially in the length of the execution of the system. And that's why you actually need some sophisticated analysis methods to analyze such a specification. But this is actually included in the overall tool support, which I will demonstrate after lunch. But now, okay, we can now try to see with a sort of bare eye whether this constraint is enforced here or not. And for that, in principle, okay, I would have to say a little bit more about how this is actually defined on the level of the execution semantics. The way this is defined is that from this model, this execution semantics gives us sequences of input and output values of the system. So input values could be the method names that are sent to the system, and probably with arguments. In the case of the write money method, there's an integer given as an argument, and the output values are the output. The output values are the return values of the methods that are called at the system. So this diagram gives us a set of sequences of input and output values, and some of these values are considered to be secret, namely those given by the read method and write money and read money methods, and other values are not supposed to be secret. And this is, for example, the return flag given by the read as a service method. And the way this is now checked is that given all these sequences of input and output, each such sequence of input and output values, from such a sequence you compute the view of this sequence that the adversary will have. And assuming that the adversary is not supposed to be able to read the secret input to the system, because that's supposed to be ensured that it remains secret by the environment of this component. This means that the adversary can only see the non-secret input and output to the system. In this example here, we don't even have a non-secret input, but we only have a non-secret output, namely this flag returned by this read as a service. And the requirement is then that for the adversary, it looks like the non-secret output is actually deterministically determined by the non-secret input. So it does not depend on the secret input. Because if that would be the case, then the adversary could could find out some partial information about the secret input. And now, so in order to see now without the tools yet whether this is enforced by this diagram, we would in principle by hand have to compute all different kinds of input and output sequences and try to see whether this constraint is fulfilled in each case, which would take a little bit too long now, but with a little bit of thinking, one can also get to the answer a little bit more quickly here by some common reasoning, namely, okay, we have, the point is that we have a read as-a-service flag here now, and this returns true or false depending on which state the system is in. And this is, as I said earlier, this is not supposed to be secret, but the state in the state chart depends on whether the money is above or below 1,000, the money attribute. And the money attribute, of course, was assumed to be secret. So we have a non-secret output, namely the return value of this Rx method, which does depend on a secret input or a secret attribute of the system, namely the secret write money and the secret method and the secret money attribute. And therefore, the tool would then give back the result that here also this now downflow requirement is actually violated in this example for the reason which I just explained.
The graph in the condition, the graph in the transition in ebook is not really secret.
This graph here, money greater than 1,000.
That's not checked on the graph.
There is no check in.
What about the graph? That's
okay. Yeah. No, the point was just that the money attribute that is supposed to be secret, and the.
If I know the state, I know what amount.
Genau. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. And I mean the state itself is internal to the component. And that is not, the adversary is not able to see the state. But the adversary gets this value, the return value from the Rx method, and that is not secret, and that reflects in what state the object is, either true or false. In that way, that's exactly the reason. In that way, the adversary or this constraint is violated, because the adversary can find out indirectly using this Rx method whether the object is in the access service or the no access service state, and if it's in the access service state, this means that the money attribute must be higher than 1,000. That's exactly the reason. Yeah. And in this example, very very simple example is to be able to put this on one slide, and there you can already see this without tool support or anything. So this, you could see this by common, you know, common thinking or something, but the point is that if you have a specification of a realistic size, where you have more than two states, of course, then it becomes very difficult or probably impossible to see these kind of problems without having tool support. And this, yeah, the same problem applies to the next kind of stereotype, the data security stereotype. This is now also supposed to enforce some behavioral security requirement, and this is now also about supposed to be used for systems that are using cryptographic algorithms. So you should be able to use this, for example, to analyze a security protocol that is actually sets up a secure channel in a correct way, that in the end the keys that are exchanged in the security protocol can then actually be used to encrypt the data which is subsequently exchanged between the parties, because this key actually remains secret. And that's of course the point of the point of the security protocol, but this is actually enforced by the protocol is actually quite difficult to see. So this is also usually not possible to do by manual reasoning. And in this slide, I will give an example for that later of actually of this protocol, which you cannot see here really. I just want to shortly define this stereotype here, and then we will come back later to this example to explain in more detail. So what we want to define here as a stereotype is a constraint which allows us to make sure, now looking at the big picture in a way, if we have a package which includes on the one hand the physical structure in the form of a deployment diagram, and then also the data structure in form of a class diagram and an activity diagram, which gives us the coordination between the components, and maybe also sequence diagrams, which defines the interaction between the components by message exchange. Then we want to make sure that all of this taken together is now really secure. With respect to the behavior that is supposed to be executed here. So that's also here again in the center of and in the focus of the consideration is the behavior between the components in the, for example, in the security protocol. And in each case, with each of these diagrams, we have to consider the security requirements that are inserted, such as the secrecy tag, which is associated with the critical stereotype that may be attached to one of the or several of the objects in the class diagram on the one hand, and we also have to consider the physical characteristics again, such as the that two components may be connected by an internet link. So compared to what we saw earlier with the secure links stereotype, there we simply made sure that there is no secret, no communication supposed to be secret over an internet link. And now in this this stereotype, we want to make sure that we want to be able to enforce this kind of requirement using, for example, or by implementing or specifying a security protocol. So here we want to be able to say that although there is an internet link in the system, since we are using a security protocol here, the secret data that is exchanged between the two components still remains secret, although it's an internet link, because we correctly set up a session key and we use the session key to correctly encrypt the secret, and this is then exchanged to the other component. And while this is it's probably obvious to see that in general you cannot establish this just by looking at the diagram that this is actually done in a secure way, and here you really also need some tool support which helps you with establishing that. The constraint that should be enforced by this data security stereotype is then that the security requirements of the data in the classes which are marked with the critical stereotype, they are supposed to be enforced against the with respect to the sequence, the communication defined in the sequence diagram, against the threat scenario which arises from the deployment diagram. And so this includes, for example, the two constraints that, firstly, the secrecy of the data that is marked with the secrecy tag is actually preserved, and secondly, the same for the data that is should be supposed to satisfy integrity. And of course also for the other security requirements, but again I can only explain it for these two requirements here. Now the question is, how can we enforce this kind of constraint in an automated tool? And the answer is again that we have to refer again to the execution semantics, in particular of this, for example, here of the sequence diagram, which is included in the package. So this, as I mentioned earlier, this package on the whole gets assigned an execution model where there are the two participants in the protocol are part of this execution model, and each of them has their own execution, and then they communicate within the overall execution model. And this this execution semantics is then analyzed in the sense that the data that is supposed to remain secret from the adversary actually does remain secret, considering that the adversary is the communication is done across certain links which may be vulnerable, such as the internet link, and that the adversary also may be able to attack the protocol in the way by including new communication, new information or new messages in the communication, and that way try to attack the communication, the secret security protocol. But as I said earlier, well, here I only want to make the point that it is really not possible to, in this case, to find out by looking at the diagram that this requirement is actually violated here. And I will explain in more detail, firstly, how this can be analyzed on the level of the formal semantics. And secondly, after lunch, I will make a short tool demo where you can actually see how this is done automatically. The interesting point here is that this protocol is a variant of the Internet Security Protocol, TLS, which is the current version of the SSL protocol, which is used in many browsers. And this variant was proposed at the Infocom conference in 1999. And so this is an example how you can see that it's really difficult to design these protocols correctly, because obviously the authors of the paper and also presumably the referees of the paper were assuming that the protocol is actually working correctly and securely, but this is not the case. I will explain this in more detail later. Can I help you with anything?
No.
Okay.
No, it's okay.
Okay. Okay. Good. Anyway, so this is some practical computer science going on here. So, the next kind of stereotype I want to explain here is the guarded access stereotype, and this is an example for a more technology specific requirement, which is specific to Java security. I can also explain this in more detail if we have time later. So the point is that in the current Java security architecture from Java 2, we have quite sophisticated security requirements. Security mechanisms. So it's, for example, it is possible to use objects in the security architecture to guard other objects. So the access to the guarded objects will then be controlled by the guard object. In this way, you can have a access control to the information that is stored on the guarded object, which is rather fine-grained and which may actually depend on the execution context and the execution state of the system. So this is rather fine-grained and rather powerful mechanism, but the problem is that this is also quite difficult to use correctly, because at compile time, it may not be possible to see at which point of the system a certain access will actually be granted to an object, or where it will not be granted, because the checks that on which the granting of the access depends on, these will be performed dynamically at execution time, and it's not clear if it is possible to analyze this statically. And therefore, you can use the stereotype to analyze the dynamic specification of your system with respect to these checks that are supposed to be enforced by the guard objects, and to make sure that the protection of the guarded objects actually works in the way that that it's supposed to do. So this is the constraint that is supposed to be enforced by this guarded access stereotype, and this should make sure that the guarded classes are firstly only accessed through guard objects, secondly that the guards, the constraints that can be formulated in the diagram are actually enforced at execution time. So this is the sort of overview of this security extension or the part of the security expansion which I can explain here. Now one can wonder to what extent this expansion, or in which ways this expansion actually meets the requirements which I formulated earlier. So firstly, I said that we want to be able to include security requirements as stereotypes in the specification, and this is, for example, possible using the secrecy, integrity, and so on stereotypes, of which I could only explain or mention the secrecy and integrity stereotypes, which you can attach to communication dependencies. And similarly, you can use the critical stereotype and the associated tags, secrecy and integrity, which you can attach to attributes or methods in a class diagram. So you can formulate the security requirements in at the various pieces of information in the system which should be protected. And then you can use these overall stereotypes to formulate the global security policies, such as data security, secure links, and so on, which should be satisfied by the specification on the whole. Then secondly, one can use these threat sets to define what kind of actions a given adversary of a given strength should be assumed to be able to perform against the various parts of the system. And this can be defined using these threat sets and the associated read, insert, and so on actions. Then the security concepts can be included, for example, by the smart card, which we saw, which has a certain threat associated, and security mechanisms. For that, we saw this example of this guarded access mechanism in the Java security architecture. Then the security primitives, such as encryption, can be used as part of the notation and are also analyzed by the tool. We saw that in this this TLS variant protocol, and I can explain this in more detail still. And the physical security can be specified and analyzed with respect to the deployment diagrams given in the package. And for security management, one can use these activity diagrams, and there we saw this example of this fail exchange specification. And then, yeah, technology-specific things can also be considered, such as the Java security mechanism, which I explained, and similarly also for corporate security. That works in a similar way. I would like to shortly say a little bit about how one can now actually enforce these constraints using automated tool support, because we saw already in a couple of examples that it's maybe even impossible to check these security requirements manually with respect to the given specification.